Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. I'm Jay Moran, and for the next hour, we're going to be talking with some friends from the Providence Farm Collective. With us, Hamadi Ali, Deputy Director. Hamadi, great to see you, sir.
Great to see you too, Jay.
And also with us, Kristen Heltman-Wise. She is the executive director of the PFC. Good to see you.
Morning, Jay. Good to see you, too.
Great that I can start off with stumbles in my first sentence. That's hopefully not a harbinger of things to come here. The Providence Farm Collective, this, of course, you've become a year-round facility out in Orchard Park and all of your ventures. But this is the time of the year, right, where it's time for farmers to get active if you're already active, right? I mean, what's going on right now?
We are getting the fields ready right now, but our farmers have been coming out since mid-April, just trying to come and check out the land if it's dry enough and to start their work. But unfortunately, it's been a very weird season so far. But we've started work in our high tunnels already. And as of last week and this week, we have been harvesting and selling produce to customers.
So the high tunnels, I was out there last year to get to see a little bit of these. So were things growing inside there all winter long?
No, not winter long.
Okay.
So they prolong the season.
Okay.
But what I mean by that, we can start early during the season and later during the season.
All
it's
right.
High tunnels, not greenhouses.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So it's a distinct difference in that regard. But the store at the Providence Farm Collective opened last weekend.
Opened on Saturday and was really well attended, well received by the community. We sold out of products. We're super excited because at the end of last year, we started to bring in farm partners from across Western New York to sell their products. So we have several Cattaraugus County farms, Wyoming County, Erie County, and this year Niagara County, we're bringing in fruit. So,
oh boy.
Yeah, we're really excited.
Now, is that open now already? Are we open on regular hours now?
So starting this Thursday through May, we'll be open on Thursdays from 1 to 4. And then starting June 1st, we'll be open on Mondays and Thursdays. And Monday hours are from 3 o'clock till 7 o'clock, and then Thursdays from 1 to 4. And that'll be probably through November. So we're really excited.
So just give me an example then. What products were people grabbing last weekend? What did we see?
So we started working with the Savage Wheat Project.
Okay.
That is a local female-led farm that she grows heirloom grains and mills them. And so she has like all sorts of different products. We sold her cereals. We brought in Bread Hive. So we sold out of their bread and granola. We work with Plato-Dale Farm for their beef, Trollbridge Farm for poultry and pork, Burley Berries and Blooms, the creamery. So they have, they sell gelato, milk, butter, We work with Eden Valley Creamery, sell their cheeses. So they're one of the few organic cheese producers locally. So we sell their cheeses, but they also have like an offshoot that does maple syrup and eggs. So we also sell their products. And I'm trying to think of like what's some other, was it like Royal Farm?
Yeah,
their apples. So yeah, so it was a lot of stuff in addition to Providence Farm Collective stuff. So it was great.
So well attended, well sold.
Yep. Yeah. Another new thing we did this year was we started selling our compost. So we have like DEC certified compost. And again, we work with all sorts of partners, including Farmer Pirates. They do pickups at restaurants in the South Towns and drop the food scraps at Providence Farm Collective. So this year we started selling our bagged compost, as well as we featured some hanging flower baskets from Zittles. And we have our own dahlia tubers that we, you know, cultivate on our farm and then sell those as well. So
just keeping you busy.
Very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what came out of what of your products did you guys sell?
So we had lettuce mix, kale.
All the healthy stuff.
Yeah, all the healthy stuff.
I guess it's all healthy, but yeah.
And what impressed me the most, actually, in terms of attendance, there was this family that showed up at the market, and they're like, oh, we didn't know this was happening, but our daughter who lives in Durango, Colorado, called us and said that you have to go to this place because there's this event going on. I'm like, wow, all the way out from Durango, Colorado to here. So that was very impressive. I took that to heart. So I just mentioned it.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, just, you know, we should also mention, of course, you are on Burton Road in Orchard Park. But I have to admit, I've been out there more than once. And I think every time I've come out, I have made the wrong turn on Burton Road. So correct me while we're sitting here and for our listeners. Best way to get there.
So you get off at Armored Duels Road off of the 219, and you can go left or right. You know, if you end up going left, you would take a left onto Murphy Road and head down to Powers Road, take a left, and then a right onto Burton. But if you take a right onto Armored Duels, you take a right onto Chestnut Ridge, like you're heading up to the park. And you take a right onto Powers and then a left onto Burton.
All right. Very good. Appreciate that.
Yep.
I'm sure I'll forget it in the summer when I come out again. anyway, so that's great. That's great to get off to a good start like that. Maybe just a little reflection then about where Providence Farm is right now compared to where you guys were when we started. And I know that you've got the history and, you know, being in East Aurora for a while, but let's just talk about moving out to Orchard Park, how things have progressed for Providence Farm Collective since you've moved out to Burton Road.
So I feel like it was a game changer. Moving there, we had a sense of agency, and I say we, like the entire community of farmer staff, where we felt it was ours and our home. And, you know, within a couple of years, we had done that joint capital campaign with the Land Conservancy and bought the land and built the barn. And so exponentially, we were realizing the vision. I think... what really has been incredibly wonderful about it all is the greater community we've built. And that includes over the last year, our community support has quadrupled just in the past year.
Really?
And that's from word of mouth. It's from networking. It's from really the sense of connection that people feel when they come out to the farm. They just feel like, oh God, this feels good. We feel a part of this. And I think I really appreciate that has happened. It has really been good for all of us. And I think all of us in Western New York, but definitely all of us at the farm. And do you want to say, add anything about that?
Yeah. So a good thing about the Providence Farm Collective, it is a farm, but also it is a community. The farmers who come to farm there, they take pride in what they do. They bring their families, their young ones who have never seen a farm before, or they just hear, oh, we come from a farming background. And when the parents bring their children and show them, like, this is how you grow things, this is where food comes from, you know, the kids appreciate that. And the parents take pride in that, like, this is what we know, this is what have made us. And I've heard a parent talking to one of his daughters, like, when I came to this country, I ran away from nightmares, you know. And when I got here, I seen things I've never seen in my life. But when I got to this farm, when I start growing things, that's how I felt. My life was back to normal. Mm. So that's how Providence Farm, how important Providence Farm it is to the farmers. It's not just something. It's not just a farm. It is a community. It's a place where people take pride, you know, come bring their families and teach their kids, you know, how to grow food.
We are talking with two folks from Providence Farm Collective. With us, Kristen Heltman-Wise, the executive director. The deputy director is Hamadi Ali. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I now know a lot about the Providence Farm Collective. And to your point, Kristen, it sounds like more and more people are finding out about it on an almost daily basis. But at the same time, we should review exactly what goes on at Providence Farm. And you touched upon it, Hamadi. People who were not born in the United States, for the most part, many of whom are refugees who have moved here, many of whom I believe are from Africa initially, are out there. But let's talk about the nationalities somebody might see because there's going to be a lot of planting already going on, probably a little bit, but a lot in the next couple of weeks. Who's going to be out in that farmland? Where are they from?
Yeah, I like to say that it's the entire world.
Yeah.
You have, of course, the Somali Bantus, where I come from. You have Ethiopians. You have Bengalis. You have Vietnamese. You have Burmese. And most recently, there was an applicant, I believe she was from Afghanistan. Yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
So it's all over the place.
Sure.
Yeah.
It does bring a special quality to it as well. I mean, you talk about the community and the kind of sense that's there, but having so many different cultures on hand, I think also enhances things, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think what is celebrated most is like our ability to be able to sit down and have conversations across all these different like cultural and linguistic divides. But really, in the end, we find there's a lot we have in common. We have the shared vision of what this farm is. We have a shared vision of the Western New York we all want to live in. Mm. And I say that like we're very committed together to do that. It doesn't mean there aren't disagreements or that people don't you know, share different points of views, but I think there's this openness to listen and to understand. And I really appreciate that about our community. I think it's actually a culture that we've all built together out there. And I also think that's why, you know, when people who don't farm at Providence Farm Collective, but are a part of the greater PFC community, when they're out there, they appreciate that. And that's something like we all kind of work really hard to have. And I think I also really appreciate that when you kind of take the time to not say, you know, that concerted effort to not say no right away. We can't do something, or like, you know, you're asking me to do something. When you just listen and you respond with that question of, well, how do you see that working, or what's behind that? You learn so much more. And I think that that's something that I really appreciate our community takes the time to do.
You want to expand on that a little bit? That's an interesting point, because when you say the ability to do things, my in-laws were dairy farmers, so I know that sense that, yeah, we can figure that out. It's whether or not we really want to do it. It's another question. But I'm wondering if you want to expand on that idea that of people working together and finding different ways of getting it done.
Well, you know, farming, I think it's one of the most neglected profession. But when you realize you can do it and there is the support, the communal support that you get, especially for someone who's not from here,
right,
but getting the support from the external community, the people that were born here come in and support these individuals, that, to me, it is something that stands out, myself and the farmers. It is very hard to someone who is not from here to navigate the system.
Right.
But getting people, say, our executive director, Kristen herself, and the larger community coming in support and like, we are standing behind you. This can be done. You can do this. And we're here for you. I think we, and what I mean by we, the farmers, take that as a very encouraging thing. It makes us do more to be there, to dedicate also. We had the dedication, but to just stand more like, okay, we can do this. It can be done.
What's the acreage out at the Burton Farm, Burton Road Farm?
37 acres of land.
Okay.
Out of land right now.
You're out of land right now.
Yeah, we're actually leasing 5 acres from Cornell Cooperative Extension, who are right next to us.
Okay.
Because we are trying to find pathways for the graduates of our incubator farm program to launch. And we've successfully launched one person so far. He's on an urban farm in the city of Buffalo.
Okay.
And we have 3 farmers who are trialing this year like a partnership. And they originally were going to be out in Attica this summer, but we need to actually let that land go fallow for another year before we lease it because it was farmed conventionally with herbicides. And so we have to like let that heal. And so they'll be trialing their model at the Cornell land this year. So when, you know, you had mentioned about like those coming together for innovative solutions, I think it's like our partners. We did this farmland access strategic planning last year where we have so many incredible partners. So regionally, across the state, but also nationally, where we're always coming together with them to figure out these ways to like help our incubator farmers launch, to find ways to address like food insecurity in the region, but in a way that also pays farmers fairly. So we're trying to like work with folks who kind of have those same shared goals and values. And that's been really great because what it does is when our farmers are brought into that, you know, people come with like this monolithic idea of who a farmer is.
Right.
And then they meet our farmers and they see like, oh, young, old men, women, American-born, naturalized citizen. And so it actually dispels that, right? And you figure out, oh, we've got to figure out a lot of different ways to do this. So what was cool about that strategic plan is we identified that actually our education program needs to grow from like a 3-year to a 5-year plus a year zero practicum. And though, so that's something that we're working, you know, to launch. We are the only incubator farm program in the region, and that's a really important thing that we're doing. So really building those partnerships, and Hamadi is like really doing a lot of work in this area of the networking. He's on the Farm Bureau Board of Directors for Erie County. And also just, you know, working with national partners to help connect our farmers to the resources they need.
Is it simple but accurate to say that there aren't enough farmers in Western New York, or we can project that there will not be enough as maybe another generation passes? What do you say?
If the current trend continues, I think there won't be enough farmers.
Wow.
Because farmers are retiring, and some of them, their kids don't want to go into farming. So what needs to be done? It is allowing these new entry farmers to be able to be, you know, to become farmers. And if not, if that's not happening, then it's going to be less farmers than having, you know, more people becoming more farmers.
Are some of the individuals that are out there that are growing their own, are they, I mean, how many, I guess, people are thinking, I can do this on the small portion of this, the 30 plus acres out here in Orchard Park. How many are thinking about, yeah, I wouldn't mind doing this, whether it's an urban farm or perhaps maybe in Attica or wherever the case may be. Is there that kind of conversation going on? I can do this. I think I can do this. Is that an ample conversation that you're hearing, or is that not so much?
In terms of I can do this, a lot of the farmers, they're able to do it.
Okay.
What is difficult, it's land access.
Right.
So accessing land, capital. It is very difficult. I keep going back to someone who was born here and someone who wasn't born here. It is difficult for someone who understands English to read some of the contracts involved in land and capital, let alone somebody who doesn't speak English. So our farmers are like, we want to farm, but also when it comes to the issue of land access, it is difficult. And Kristen mentioned that I joined the Farm Bureau, and one of the reasons is to connect the farmers with the rural communities where, you know, rural communities and these immigrant farmers come to, you know one another, understand each other. And also PFC, helping these farmers navigate, you know, the nuances of accessing capital, accessing land. So yes, the farmers want to do it, but when it comes to what it's involved in getting the land, a lot of them stand behind it like, okay, I need someone to navigate this for me. And
sure,
that's where PFC comes in. Yeah, but it's doable.
And one of the like things that happened very recently was there was this increasing access to land and capital, a USDA grant. And that was, I think it was like 3 years ago this grant was released. And the Somali Bantu Community Farm had partnered with Agrarian Trust to apply for that grant, and they received it, except it was terminated last week. And the really, you know, alarming part of that for Western New York is that there is a farmer, retiring farmer out in Alden, New York, on a 78-acre farm who has been sitting on this land for a couple years waiting for this grant to be finalized. And that land was going to go to the Somali Bantu, so it would be this transition of a farm to a new generation of farmers protected and continuing as farmland, and it's ended. And so this poor man, like, doesn't have a plan right now. The Somali Bantu, who have been looking over 20 years for their own farm, are again cut off from that opportunity. And I just think that really does impact us all in this region, because having the ability regionally to be self-sufficient in food production is really important to our security. So we are not being mindful about transitioning farmland, building that new generation of farmers and making this transition happen.
And just to be clear, 78 acres of land that is currently farmed and ready to go.
Yes.
Is becoming more and more rare, correct?
It's becoming more and more rare. And now it's again at threat of being developed, right? Purchased and being developed because it's more expensive anyhow. And I think of like our land on Burton Road, $507,000 like 5 years ago for that land. It's more than, you know, probably doubled in its value just because of where it's located in Orchard Park. And that is happening across the country. I mean, it's not just here.
We've got a lot to talk about with the Providence Farm Collective this morning on What's Next. With us, Kristen Heltman-Wise and also Hamadi Ali. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with more. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
A downed tree, a broken bike or two, and hundreds of miles between Buffalo and Brooklyn. That's the journey in Rolling Through, a new video series from Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Producer Pat Kelly is biking the Empire State Trail, exploring nature, culture, and how eco-friendly travel can connect us to the places we visit.
Oh, we are getting rain soon.
Cool. We can wrap it's coming.
New episodes of Rolling Through arrive every week. Watch on the BTPM YouTube channel and BTPM Plus.
Calling all high school students in grades 9 through 12 in Western New York and Southern Ontario. BTPM is inviting you to participate in Unfinished Revolutions, New Perspectives, New Voices, an essay contest about the American Revolution and the unfinished revolutions shaping society today, like people who work tirelessly to make liberty, freedom, and democracy real for everyone. The deadline to enter is May 15th. Visit btpm.org/American-Revolution to enter your essay and share your voice today.
Public media starts here. In our neighborhoods, our schools, our city halls, where decisions meet real life. BTPM NPR's local reporters are asking the questions that matter, listening to the people affected, and explaining what it all means for our region.
There's a lot of poor record keeping. There are records that lists that don't reconcile with other lists. There's a lot of gasoline that's being used that isn't properly accounted for. And there are a lot of people with take-home vehicles.
That's Erie County Comptroller Kevin Hardwick. He's outlining just a few of the issues his office found when conducting an audit of the county's vehicle fleet.
From paper trails to public impact, this is journalism that stays with the story and with the community it serves. Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR, produces journalism with depth, care, and purpose. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. I'm Jay Moran. Glad to have you along with us today. We're talking with two members of the Providence Farm Collective, their Deputy Director, Hamadi Ali, and their Executive Director, Kristen Heltman-Wise. All right, so the Providence Farm Collective recently awarded a grant just shy of $200,000 from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Congratulations, I guess, first and foremost. But tell us about what this means.
So this is a grant that supports our community farms program. So our two big programs are the Incubator Farm Program and Community Farms Program. And what it supports is we have 204 people last year farmed at Providence Farm Collective. Wow. And of those, about 21 were incubator farmers. The rest, volunteers on our community farms. So those are folks who live in the city of Buffalo, both the west and east sides of the city. They drive out to grow on their community farms, and that food is brought back to the city, or sometimes it's shared through Providence Farm Collective's aggregation program with food pantries in like Colden, Hamburg, Orchard Park, Cheektowaga. So kind of all over this food reaches. And this grant is actually a great opportunity because historically it was primarily for urban farmers, urban farms. And so it's kind of an expansion of that idea that you can have urban farmers who farm in more rural or suburban areas, bigger plots of land to increase food access. And to me, that's a really big step because what's always been a challenge of Providence Farm Collective is we are located in a pretty well-off community of, Orchard Park. Sure. But our farmers come from poorer communities, low-income communities in the city of Buffalo. And so we will often get from elected officials who visit, yeah, these are my constituents, but not my district, or this is my district, but not my constituents. And I feel like this is actually the first grant opportunity where, you know, it's a government grant where folks are kind of saying, yeah, you're both, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a really important discernment, I think. So, and do you want to talk a little bit about community farms and like their impact?
So the community farms, where people grow food for their own communities, and as Kristen also indicated, sometimes taking that food to the aggregation program and donating to various food pantries. Before I became the deputy director, I was the markets manager, where I directly worked in these food pantries. And what surprised me the most, you will go to food pantries where they already have produce, but when I walked in with my produce, sometimes they will put aside the other produce. This is fresh. You know, these other places, they donate to us food that is almost bad already, but they just, it's like a dumping place, dumping ground. But this is fresh, you know. And that's how this community, how important these community farms are, growing food for their own community. And their own community doesn't mean a Burundian grows food solely for their Burundian community. No, a Burundian may grow food for the food pantry on the west side, a food pantry in Alden. So that's how important these farms are, you know.
Just when you brought it up, though, I also, but some of the food that is grown there, actually quite a bit, are things that would have been grown in homeland, right? I mean, you know, there's vegetables and things along those lines that are being grown in Orchard Park at Providence Farm that is generally not being grown anywhere in this region or for that matter in the country, right?
Exactly. So you have things that are not available here in supermarkets, say simply the African eggplant.
Right.
You know, it's haven't been grown here. But as of late, actually, there's some farmers who have developed an interest of growing it. And earlier you mentioned me being in Birmingham, Alabama.
Right.
Interestingly, I was talking to a gentleman and mentioned, we were talking about eggplants, and he mentioned the eggplant as the rainbow eggplant. I'm like, can you please Google that and let me see it? And when he Googled it, the African eggplant popped up. And I asked him, I was like, that's the African eggplant. He's like, well, I grew it in North Carolina, but my neighbor made me grow it. I was like, where does your neighbor come from? From the Congo. I'm like, that explains it all, because they love the African eggplants. We grow them at Providence Farm Collective. Mainly they are grown by the Congolese community. So it's grown here at Providence Farm Collective, and it's getting footing elsewhere, but we kind of started here.
How about that? Do you heavily suggest someone like me getting some African eggplant?
Yes. And interestingly, we sell the African eggplant seeds. Our incubator farmer, Kandola Makongo, sells it to True Love Seed. And this year, actually, they wanted him to sign a contract to give more and to promise that he will meet the production they want.
Wow.
Yeah. And they sell nationwide.
Really?
Yes.
Now that brings me to another point, and I wanted to let you, maybe Kristen can expand on this. Hamadi, obviously, hop in. Our previous conversation, one of the conversations we had to have is a conversation about a federal grant that was, in essence, withdrawn. I think since then there's been lawsuits and things along those lines to try to get that funding back. But I'm more interested in a general point of view. As you were talking about this DEC grant that you got, I couldn't help but think that we're seeing an example of where a lot of government spending can be criticized for a lot of different reasons. Usually the catch-all word is waste. What I'm hearing when I hear you talk about this grant is something, money that is going to be exponentially used in different ways and have an impact in different places. And I'm just wondering if you want to expand on just that idea that, you know, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air about some issues that you're hearing about at the USDA and what the future might look like for some of these monies that have been, you know, kind of been part of our reality for several years, maybe going away. It's a kind of a large winding question, but I'm just curious if you'd like to speak to the value of these types of grants that come to Providence Farm and maybe even beyond that in the general community.
Yeah, thanks, Jay, for asking that. I think it's important for people to, you know, remember foremost, these are our tax dollars being reinvested or invested back in this region. And what's really interesting about agriculture and food systems investment through grant money is it has a multiplier effect. So when you look at SNAP, for example, SNAP in Western New York, it has a multiplier of 1.5. And that's on the low end, honestly, because a grant like this DEC grant or some of the other federal grants that invest in developing farmers and supporting like farmers markets and things like that, those have a multiplier of 2 to 3, depending on, you know, the community that they're invested in. And when it's small and mid-sized farms, you're definitely between that 2 and 3 times impact in the region. Those are smaller farmers who that money is being reinvested locally. It's being circulated in our local economy. And that's why, for example, at our store, we feature local products from local farms because we know our farmers, one, need those outlets. So they need that connection to the local consumer, but also that money stays here, you know? So I think it's really important to understand that government grants aren't handouts. They're actually an economic generator, and they have outsized impact when it comes to investing in our farms and in our food system.
Thank you for that answer. I appreciate it for sure. We're talking with Hamadi Ali and also Kristen Heltman-Wise of Providence Farm Collective. I got to jump back now. So one of your farmers is selling seeds nationally now.
Correct.
That's amazing. How did that connection come about?
I am not sure exactly how it came about, but Mr. Condolo works directly with Mo, our farm mentor, and Beth Liepler, our farm director. I think that's where the connection came from.
Yeah, it was about 4 years ago. So True Love, I believe, was a place where we would source heirloom seeds. And then we started talking to them about some of our farmers, because I think Rosa also like sold some seeds 1 year, and Dow did too. So, but Condolo has been like consistent for like 3 or 4 years selling seeds to them. And that's the thing. So there are these like niche seed production companies, and True Love Seeds is one of them. And again, they're smaller, but what they're committed to is like protecting biodiversity, right? So it's selling these traditional seeds that aren't treated with, you know, different kinds of pesticides, herbicides, whatever. And they're sold across the country, which is really great. And it's important.
And how good does it taste?
The African eggplant?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
As long as you know how to make it. It have this bitterness, but it has a lot of medicinal purposes too.
Really?
From what I heard, you know, it's good for high blood pressure.
Okay.
And also diabetes. Some of the farmers eat them raw. I can't because of the bitterness.
Okay.
But I've seen people eat them and they're like, you know, it's medicine. You know, it's not just food. It actually helps me with my, you know, manage my blood pressure, manage my diabetes. So, yes.
What's your favorite produce that's grown out on the community farms?
My favorite produce? Salad mix. I grow a lot. My wife farms there, and I've developed this, I don't know, sense of like being very close to salad mix. I tend to take good care of it because I eat my salads, and also I just like growing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's favorite both not only as food,
but also I have this connection to it.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're still doing lots of farming on your own besides your duties as deputy director.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How much are you going to be growing?
How much?
Yeah.
Gosh, I'll say a lot.
A lot.
Yeah. Right. I don't know exactly how the amount, but I will grow a lot of salad mix this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because when you say, you know, use the term like a lot, I think Hamadi, you know, you're developing a politician's element here for a guy who wasn't born in the United States. we're going to take one more time out. We're going to come back and finish up our conversation with Providence Farm Collective with us, Hamadi Ali, Kristen Heltman-Wise. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
What is BTPM Plus? It's an evolution of Buffalo Toronto Public Media that brings you the best of PBS, where you can watch your favorite programs live and dig into collections curated just for you. And here's the best part. When you stream BTPM Plus, you're not just watching. You're supporting your local public media station, the journalism, the arts, and the storytelling that keeps our community connected. Visit btpm.org/plus today. Stream smarter. Stream local.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media brings our community together with programs that inspire, inform, and entertain. Enjoy trusted news, local performances, educational resources, and cultural treasures all in one place. It's more than media. It's a connection to the world around you. Discover what Buffalo Toronto Public Media offers at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. I'm Jay Moran. We're talking with two members of the Providence Farm Collective, their executive director, Kristen Heltman-Wise, and their deputy director, Hamadi Ali. Hamadi couldn't record with us last week because he was in Birmingham, Alabama. First time ever?
Yes. So I was attending the Distressed Borrowers Association Assistance Network,
okay,
which is organized by Farm Aid, FLAG. It is an acronym. I can't really spell it.
That's okay.
And RAFI, also an acronym, which I forgot what it stands for. But they work with small to medium-sized farmers who have borrowed and now, as the title goes, distressed, and see how they can help them, you know, navigate, the system, if you will. Actually, FLAG is one of the organizations that represents one of our cases, the when we got terminated with the BFRDP grant.
Right.
I think FLAG reached out and we start working with them representing us in court.
So what did you learn? First question, how many people would you say, I'll let you describe yourself, how many people like Hamadi Ali did you meet in Birmingham?
So I am an immigrant here, also black. And at the conference, I met one person who was born outside of the country from Sudan.
Okay.
And myself and Mohammed Berwa, we call him Mo, also from Providence Farm Collective. But to my surprise, there were about seven other people of color who were ranchers, mainly from the South. And that kind of caught me off guard because I'm not used to many farmers of color.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So in that regard, definitely a learning experience just in that element of it as well. What do you take from a conference like that, looking forward and looking to what you have to do as deputy director and looking at the future for Providence Farm Collective? Do you take something, a spirit from a conference like that?
Yeah, so our farmers here, when we take them to places, sometimes the adult, they stand out. When I went there, I'm like, oh, it doesn't have to be like that. Mm-hmm. Actually, there is that connection. There are, you know, farming is for everybody. Doesn't know anybody's color. If you want to become a farmer, you can become a farmer. And also what I got, it's navigating the system, both legally and financially, because sometimes you need legal presentation and it costs a lot to have someone to present you in court. But there are people who actually dedicate their time to represent these small farmers in court if they can afford to pay the big legal fees.
Hmm.
And also there are so many programs that exist for smaller farms to, you know, either navigate how to get finance and how they can finance their farms. But it takes a lot. I learned these things and I'm willing to learn more so I can, you know, help our farmers at Providence Farm Collective, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. So planting is going to be going on in the coming weeks here. How busy is it going to be?
It's going to be a really busy year because we also are leasing those 5 acres next door as well. So we anticipate a really busy year. We have a lot of projects coming up this year. Hamadi and I, on May 31st, traveled to Washington, D.C. I was invited to be a panelist at the Food as Medicine Conference. So we're going to be there to talk about values aligned purchasing to support food as medicine. And we have in June 25th, we're actually launching a 5-month traveling art exhibit at the Birchfield Penny. It'll start. That is our cyanotype project. We have these really huge, beautiful cyanotype tapestries that were made three or four years ago, along with three artists in the region and with our farmers. And so we're taking that on the road. We're doing it like very, I would say inclusively, it's who we are, right? So it actually will go from Birchfield Penny to a food pantry, to a community center, back to a food pantry. We'll be at the Erie County Fair. So we're kind of traveling all over. We'll be at one of the public libraries. And I think that that's really important because we're bringing in different people, partners in the region, but also some folks from out of state as well, to talk about like the food system and agriculture and just how important it is to celebrate our agricultural heritage. That's actually part of the name of the exhibit. It's Everybody Eats, Celebrating Our Agricultural Heritage. And so we're really excited to like uplift people's work, but also have the conversations.
And the West Side Farmers Market back in session again this summer?
Yes, June 24th, 7th, I believe.
June 27th, okay.
Yes, we'll kick it off.
Saturday morning.
Yeah. Saturday morning, alongside with the
Taste of Diversity. And I think it's called the Myanmar Water Festival now. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
And where are you located?
We are located at 130 Grant Street, right off the M&T Bank parking lot.
Okay. And what should people expect when they come to your farmer's market?
It's vegetables from all over the world.
Really?
I will say yes. From collard greens, potatoes, tomatoes, to the nyanya chungu. The African eggplant.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
You have to speak down to my terms as best you can, Hamadi. I apologize. So and I'm just wondering what the response is to some of that. I mean, there are people, I guess we call them, whether both compliment or derisively, foodies, people who just love different types of food. Do you find people like, wow, I'd like to try this, or they try something from the farmer's market and come back looking for more? Do you find a little of that type of a customer?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of folks who stop by just seeing the market.
Sure.
And don't know certain products. It's like, hey, how do you prepare this? And kind of tell them and they'll take it. You see them coming back next week. Like, oh, it is delicious. I want more of it. So yeah, we got folks like that, but also the people from the neighborhood, you know, it's on Saturday morning. This is their place to go right now. They expect us to be there, you know, from June to late October. It's what, our fifth year right now, this year.
Fifth year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And it's become a community event. It's more a neighborhood event almost, yeah.
A neighborhood event, you know. And we are still doing it. Though, as Kristen mentioned earlier, we were denied the FMMP grant to this year, but that hasn't discouraged us. We are going strong, and with the help of the community, we are going to continue.
I'm most certainly encouraged by that as well. Kristen, you're the executive director of this, and we've talked a little bit before about how it's grown, but this has been a 90% positive, optimistic conversation. Mm-hmm. What's on the horizon, though? What do you see storm clouds on the horizon at all?
Yeah, of course. I think there are big changes happening at the federal level, where at the USDA, for example, you know, that actual physical building that's in DC is going to be shut down. They're actually moving to satellite offices, mostly in the South and the West. And that has implications for us all here. I think, you know, federal funding across the board has been cut. New York State has done a really good job of trying to bandage that, to bridge that. But I also think, you know, it's not really sustainable. So again, we're going to all have to come together and figure out some creative solutions here to that. I know for us, we're really lucky. We have this great community behind us. We have a network across the state and the nation that stands behind us. But it doesn't mean that at some point, you know, we couldn't be shut down. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
But for now, you know, I feel like we're doing a really good job of driving our mission, of having a vision that considers all of us in Western New York and, you know, taking care of one another. I really look forward to going to DC, you know, in a month, to again, like, networking and seeing, you know, what kinds of connections we can help our farmers to build at that level. I'm excited for that art exhibit, because every time we bring together Western New Yorkers, it's really good. You know, it's not just the Sabres and Bills that bring people together. It's also Providence Farm Collective. And I am really proud of, like, our ability to do that. But I think anybody in the nonprofit sector is concerned about, you know, how do we sustain the work that we do when there's increasing demand for it and fewer resources. And I think that's something that's a really important conversation that all of us need to be having.
And then finally, if somebody wants to check out Providence Farm Collective, what's the best way to do that?
So definitely visit our website. We have a lot of events coming up. We do have tours on Mondays and Thursdays throughout the summer. They're paid tours, but we have six different themes that we offer the tours in. You can farm or shop at the farm store on Mondays and Thursdays. There's the farmers market starting at the end of June on Saturdays. We have workshops and cooking classes throughout the season too. And then, you know, I would say just explore our website and learn about the different things that we do.
Those cooking classes, they'll teach me how to prepare my African eggplant.
So far, not yet.
Yes.
But Roselle is one of them.
But Roselle, definitely. Roselle, the sour leaf. So,
all right.
We have a chef who makes it best.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. I always like to put you on the spot. Hamadi Ali and Kristen Helton Wise, thanks very much for being with us on What's Next.
Thank you, Jay.
This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.